This is the Music Halls of Fame podcast. This week, we honor the year in music for 2003, along with a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2003. We also look at the case for putting Linkin Park into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Plus, our spotlight museum is the Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. Before we get going with the podcast, like everyone tells you, please like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you'll know when these podcast episodes drop, which is usually every Thursday. Now, on to this week's episode. The year was 2003. In music for that year, producer Phil Spector was arrested and later convicted for the death of actress Lana Clarkson. Michael Jackson was also arrested that year on child molestation charges. He would later be found not guilty, at least in a court of law. A fire in a nightclub in Rhode Island claimed 100 lives when pyrotechnics set off during a performance by the group Great White set the nightclub on fire, quickly spreading and then trapping people inside. The Dixie Chicks, now called the Chicks, created controversy when they came out against the Iraq War, which at the time had high public approval ratings. That would later change as the decade went on. The iTunes Store opened online on April 28th of that year, saving the music industry from itself. The Recording Industry Association of America started suing fans who downloaded music illegally. Singles didn't sell as much overseas, as 2003 was the first year that no singles sold over a million copies in the United Kingdom. Celine Dion started a trend when she started her residency shows in Las Vegas, pop and rock stars doing month-long and multi-year concert runs in casinos in Vegas at the height of their careers would soon become the norm and no longer the exception. Groups who were formed in 2003 included the Cheetah Girls, Chloe and Haley, Gnarls Barkley, Equilibrium, Nina Sky, Ramsey's, and the Pussycat Dolls. Groups who either broke up or took their extended breaks until their inevitable reunions included B.B. Mac, Black Flag, Men Without Hats, Pantera, The Cranberries, Quiet Riot, Propeller Heads, Remy Zero, The Righteous Brothers, The Rollins Band, S Club 7, Gangstar, Gravity Kills, Seville, Stone Temple Pilots, Suede, Winger, and Wild Orchid. As usual, a bunch of those groups got back together for at least a tour or two. Groups that officially got back together in 2003 included The Stooges and Edge of Sanity. 50 Cent had the biggest album of the year on the pop charts with Get Rich or Die Trying. Other big albums were Norah Jones's Come Away With Me, Michael Jackson's Number Ones, The Dixie Chicks' Home, Linkin Park's Meteora, Evanescence's Fallen, Beyoncé's debut solo album, Dangerously in Love, Christina Aguilera's Stripped, Britney Spears' In the Zone, Avril Lavigne's Let's Go, and Coldplay's A Rush of Blood to the Head. 50 Cent also scored the number one single of 2003 on the Hot 100 Singles chart within the club. Other hit songs were R. Kelly's Ignition, Sean Paul's Get Busy, Beyoncé and Jay-Z's Crazy in Love, Three Doors Down's When I'm Gone, Matchbox 20's Unwell, Chingy's Right There, Aaliyah's Miss You, Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow's Picture, and Evanescence's Bring Me to Life. In country music, Toby Keith, Brenda Lee, Joe DiMassina, Leanne Rimes, Trace Adkins, and Alan Jackson all had best-selling greatest hits albums. Other big country albums that were released included Buddy Jewell's self-titled album, Chris Cagle's self-titled album, Daryl Worley's Have You Forgotten, George Strait's Honky Tonkville, Martina McBride's Martina, Brad Paisley's Mud on the Tires, Brooks and Dunn's Red Dirt Road, and Winona's What the World Needs Now is Love. Alan Jackson and Jimmy Buffett had the biggest hit of the year with It's 5 O'Clock Somewhere. Other big country singles included Mark Wills's 19-something, Blake Shelton's The Baby, Toby Keith and Willie Nelson's Beer for My Horses, Joe Nichols' Broken Heartsville, Diamond Rio's I Believe, Gary Allen's Man to Man, and also Tough Little Boys, Lone Star's My Front Porch Looking In, Tim McGraw's Real Good Man, Kenny Chesney's There Goes My Life, and Randy Travis's Three Wooden Crosses. In hip-hop, the biggest album was, of course, 50 Cent's Get Rich or Die Tryin', but other big albums that were released included Outkast's Grammy Award-winning album, Speaker Box of Love Below, along with Jay-Z's The Black Album, Tupac's Tupac Resurrection, Ludacris's Chicken and Beer, G-Unit's Beg for Mercy, DMX's Grand Champ, The Neptunes, The Neptune Presents Clones, Obie Trice's Cheers, and the Bad Boys 2 movie soundtrack. As far as singles went, of course, 50 Cent's In the Club was the biggest, but he also had competition from himself, specifically the songs 21 Questions, PMIP, and Wanksta. Other hits included Ludacris's Stand Up, Lil Kim's Magic Stick, Chingy's Holiday Inn, One Call Away, and Right There, Nelly's Air Force Ones, Jay-Z's Excuse Me, Miss, Busta Rhymes and Mariah Carey's I Know What You Want, Fabulous's Can't Let You Go, and also Into You, Youngblood's Damn, Pharrell Williams' Frontin', and a song by legendary wrestler Randy Muscle Man Savage called Remember Me, which went to number one. Go figure. In dance music, Music Magazine stopped publishing a hard copy magazine. Tiësto started the trend of DJs doing solo stadium and arena shows. On the dance charts, the pop and R&B crossover artists who had hits were a rather eclectic bunch that year. Among them were Madonna, Mariah Carey, Justin Timberlake, Seal, Pink, Michael Jackson, Daniel Bedingfield, Jewel, along with Elvis Presley and the Rolling Stones. Yes, you heard that right. DJ Paul Oakenfold did a remix of Elvis' song Rubberneckin', and there was a remix of the Stones' classic Sympathy for the Devil that hit number one. As far as the more legit, quote-unquote, dance artists other than DJ Paul Oakenfold, The Weeknd Players, Freeland, Paul Van Dyke, Bob Sinclair, Darude, Boomkat, Christine W., Anastasia, Robbie Rivera, BT, The Funky Green Dogs, Laura Pausini, Chris Cox, Becky Bailing, and Deborah Cox all had big dance hits in 2003. But probably the longest lasting song of 2003 in terms of impact both on radio and in DJ and festival mixes to this very day is Benny Benassi's classic electro house anthem, Satisfaction. The top 10 DJs on DJ Mag's Top 100 DJs poll for the year, by the way, were Tiësto, Paul Van Dyke, Armin Van Buuren, Sasha, John Digweed, Ferry Corsten, Carl Cox, Paul Oakenfold, Judge Jules, and Deep Dish. In Latin music, Juanes was the biggest act of the year. Also having good years were Celia Cruz, Ricky Martin, Shakira, Cumbia Kings, Ricardo Orjona, and La India, Broadway musicals and revivals that opened in 2003 included Wicked, Avenue Q, Bells, 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 Bounce, Caroline or Change, The Full Monty, Jerry Springer, The Opera, Never Gonna Dance, Show Tune, Taboo, Thoroughly Modern Millie, The Boy from Oz, Fame on 42nd Street, and Tonight's the Night. Musical movies, concert films, and documentaries included Brother Bear, Camp, End of the Century, The Story of the Ramones, From Justin to Kelly, The Jungle Book 2, Love Under the Sun, A Mighty Wind, School of Rock, The Singing Detective, and Tupac Resurrection. Artists who were born in 2003 included Olivia Rodrigo, The Kid LAROI, Bad Barbie, JoJo Siwa, Tate McRae, and Blanco. Artists who unfortunately passed away in 2003 included country music superstar Johnny Cash, his wife June Carter Cash, Maurice Gibb of the Bee Gees, singer and songwriter Warren Zevon, Howie Epstein of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, country music singer Johnny Paycheck, jazz songstress Nina Simone, R&B singer and songwriter Edwin Starr, Noel Redding of the Jimi Hendrix Experience, flute player Herbie Mann, entertainer extraordinaire Mr. Bob Hope, the founder of Sun Studios, Sam Phillips, entertainer Gregory Hines, entertainer Donald O'Connor, the maestro of love himself, Mr. Barry White, show you right, the queen of salsa herself, Celia Cruz, country music singer Slim Dusty, singer Hank Ballard, singer Robert Palmer, singer-songwriter Elliott Smith, popular symphony conductor Michael Kamen, country music singer Don Gibson, singer Bobby Hatfield, and rappers Sabotage, Camouflage, Half a Mill, and Soulja Slim. In awards for the music of 2003, Outkast became the first hip-hop act to win the Grammy Award for Best Album for Speakerbox The Love Below. Coldplay won Record of the Year for Clocks. Luther Vandross and Richard Marx won Song of the Year for Dance With My Father, and Evanescence won Best New Artist, which had yet another one of those awkward moments when fellow new artist nominee 50 Cent went up on stage when Evanescence won in order to complain, pulling a Kanye in the process. At the American Music Awards, Madonna won Artist of the Year. At the Billboard Music Awards, 50 Cent won Artist of the Year. At the MTV Video Music Awards, Madonna kissed Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera, which was all anybody could talk about for the next freaking year. But aside from that, the Video of the Year actually went to Missy Elliott for Work It. Outkast won Album of the Year at the Soul Train Music Awards. Beyoncé and Faith Hill won the music categories at the People's Choice Awards. At the Eurovision Song Contest, which was held in Riga, Latvia, Sertab Erener from the country of Turkey won for the song Every Way That I Can. Alan Jackson won Entertainer of the Year at the Country Music Association Awards, and Toby Keith won Entertainer of the Year at the Academy of Country Music Awards. The Darkness won Best British Album for Permission to Land, and Dido won Best Song for White Flag at the Brit Awards. Sam Roberts won Best Album for We Were Born in a Flame, while Nelly Furtado won Best Song for Powerless, Say What You Want at the Juno Awards. Powderfinger won Album of the Year for Vulture Street, and Delta Goodrum won Song of the Year for Born to Try at the ARIA Music Awards. At the Tony Awards, Hairspray won Best Musical, and Nine won Best Revival of a Musical. The Pulitzer Prize for Music was won by John Adams for On the Transmigration of Souls. Musically, at the Academy Awards, the movie The Return of the King won both music categories, with the song Into the West winning Best Song and Howard Shore winning Best Original Score. Dizzy Rascal won the Mercury Music Prize for the album Boy in the Corner, becoming the first rapper to win that award. The 2003 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony was held on March 10th at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. During the ceremony, the hall inducted drummer Benny Benjamin, pianist Floyd Kramer, and saxophonist Steve Douglas into the sidemen category. Record executive Mo Austin was inducted into the non-performers category. And as far as the performers category went, the induction class was stacked with popular talent, and deservedly so, with artists AC/DC, The Righteous Brothers, The Clash, and Elvis Costello and The Attractions, all being inducted, along with this next group. The The Police were one of the biggest bands to come out of the post-punk era in England. Their mixture of punk, pop, and reggae, along with thoughtful lyrics, gave them 5 multi-platinum albums and scores of hits. Gordon Sumner was a former schoolteacher who was in the jazz fusion band Last Exit when he met drummer Stuart Copeland up in Newcastle, England. The two hit it off, and when Sting moved to London, the two got together and started jamming. And soon they decided to start the band The Police. The guys got Henry Padovani, who was the guitarist for the group The Corsicans, to be their guitarist. While the guys were getting The Police going, Sting was also in a group called Strontium 90. Stuart would sit in sometimes and play drums, and it was there that the guys met guitarist Andy Summers. Impressed by his playing, they asked Andy to be The Police's second guitarist. He said yes, but he really wanted to be the only guitarist. Sting and Stuart weren't thrilled with kicking Henry out of the band, but after a couple of gigs as a quartet, Henry was unfortunately let go. The group, now a trio, released their debut album Outlandish D'Amour in 1978. The album yielded the hits Roxanne, Can't Stand Losing You, and So Lonely. The first two hits were sort of banned by the BBC, which is to say that they couldn't get played at certain times, definitely during the daytime, only late nights. No matter, though. The songs were big hits because how much street cred could you possibly get as a new band if you are being banned by the BBC? Pretty good. Roxanne actually has a very interesting backstory. In 1977, the group played a gig at the Nashville Club in Paris, France. During that night, Sting took in the neighborhood of the band's hotel when he came upon the city's red light district. While he won't say what he did there while he was there, we do know that at least it gave him an idea for a song about a guy who fell in love with a prostitute and who wanted her to change her ways. The group went and recorded Sting's song, but they weren't too thrilled with it. Their manager, Miles Copeland, thought that it was a really good song, so they kept at it. The song was released first in 1978 in England, where it went nowhere. Then the song was released in 1979 in America, where it took off. The song was then re-released in England, where it finally gained some traction, and at this point, The Police had their career off and running. Roxanne became a top 40 hit in 7 different countries. In New Zealand, it went top 10. In America, it only got as high as number 31. The song also got a slight boost from a very unlikely source. In the movie 48 Hours, star Eddie Murphy sang Roxanne towards the beginning of the movie. The song has since become a shower karaoke classic. Their next album, 1979's Regatta de Blanc, had the hits Walking on the Moon and Message in a Bottle. While the album hit number 1 in Great Britain, they were hard-pressed to find a lot of success in America. Outlandish, for instance, only got to number 25 on the Billboard Albums chart. Regatta de Blanc didn't even crack the top 40. The band finally broke through in America with the 1980 album Zenyatta Mandata. That album had the top 10 American singles, Da-Do-Do-Do-Da-Da-Da, and Don't Stand So Close to Me. What helped the album at this point was MTV, which had just come onto the scene right during that year. The Police's music videos gave them the exposure that they needed to crack the American market. Their next album, Ghost in the Machine, furthered their ambition with the hit songs Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic and Spirits in the Material World. The Police really hit their peak with their next album, which was called Synchronicity. The lead single from that album was written by Sting. It is one of the most misunderstood songs in rock music history, not for its words, but actually for its subject matter. The song is about a stalker, but people everywhere think to this very day that it is a love song. Sting says that people still come up to him and say that their babies were conceived to this song, to which he actually just does not like that at all. Kind of makes him feel real cringy. Sting wrote the song in 1982 while staying at James Bond author's Ian Fleming's GoldenEye Estate, which is a beautiful estate, by the way, in Jamaica. Sting was going through a divorce at the time, but says he was also thinking about government and media surveillance. He only realized after the fact how creepy the song sounded, even though it sounded like a love song. Sarah McLachlan had that exact same problem with her song Possession, which is actually about the man who stalked her before he took his own life, but it sounded an awful lot like a love song. The demo for the song was recorded at Utopia Studios in London, England. It was then worked on between December 1982 to February 1983 at George Martin's Air Studios on the island of Montserrat in the Caribbean, where they were working on the Synchronicity album. Hugh Padgham was doing producing duties for this particular album. The group tried out the song in a bunch of different styles before finally settling in on the pop version that you know and love today. Andy Summers came up with the guitar riff by listening to composer Béla Bartók. They took 6 weeks to perfect the snare drums and the bass, with overdubs on the drums with the Oberheim DMX drum machine, a Tama gong drum, and also a snare drum. The piano was added to the bridge part in order to give the song that little extra added punch that the song needed. The music video also helped this song achieve its popularity. Directed by Godley and Cream, the video is a black and white video that uses a lot of shadow effects and imagery. The music video turned out to become one of the most recognizable music videos ever to be made, and also won a lot of its awards on its own. The song, Every Breath You Take, was released on May 20th, 1983, and raced up the charts, landing at number one. It was nominated for 3 Grammy Awards. Unfortunately, it ran into a buzzsaw of an album and a ton of songs by Michael Jackson and Thriller, which ran roughshod over the various award shows that upcoming award season. The song had further life when Sean Combs heavily sampled the song for his tribute song to the Notorious B.I.G., I'll Be Missing You. Sting even graciously sang the song with Sean during a Grammy ceremony. What was Sting not so gracious about, and rightfully so? The fact that Sean Combs sampled Sting's song without Sting's permission. Combs now has to give up royalties on the song, which last figure I saw meant that Sting makes $2,000 every single day on average just from Combs's version, let alone the Police's original version, which actually gets played on the radio a whole lot more than Combs's version. For those of you trying to do a little quick math in your head on that, that means that Sting makes $730,000 a year in royalties from Combs's song. And all of that because Combs didn't ask first to use the song. So, there's a little lesson in there for you budding DJs, artists, and producers. Don't steal someone's song. Do the professional courtesy thing and at least ask first. The song has been estimated to contribute to at least a quarter of all Sting's song royalties, which is an awful lot of money, by the way. And it is one of the most played songs on radio. The Police broke up after the Synchronicity tour due to infighting. Shocking, especially during the making of that song, as Sting and Stewart really hated each other and almost had a couple fistfights. But the group, after a while, got back together for a 150-concert reunion tour in 2007 to 2008, and they are still to this day considered one of the greatest bands of the 1980s. Inducted by Gwen Stefani, Gordon Sumner, a.k.a. Sting, Stuart Copeland, and Andy Summers. The Police, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2003, and we have put all of the Police's albums onto this week's podcast music playlist. The link, as always, is in the show notes for you. Be Before we go any further, we'd like to tell you that there is now a Music History in Depth podcast where we go more in depth on a few of the events that happened in music history for that particular week. The Music History in Depth podcast drops every Tuesday on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast from, as does our Music History Today podcast, which goes over the daily events in music history. The Music History Today podcast drops daily, including weekends, on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, back to this podcast. We're going to start our look at artists who will be eligible for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for the first time in 2025. That means that their first official release came out in 2000. Yep, feel old, people. We will start our journey with a group that was formed in Agoura Hills, California, Linkin Park. So, with that in mind, to the tail of the tape we go. Linkin Park released 7 studio albums, 3 live albums, 2 compilation albums, 3 soundtrack albums, and 2 remix albums. Of those, 12 hit the top 40, with all but 2 of those hitting the top 10, including 5 going to number 1. They also released 35 singles. Of those, 32 hit the top 40 on various American charts, including 18 of those 32 going top 10 and 10 of those 18 going to number 1. They've sold over 70 million albums and 30 million singles worldwide. Their 2000 debut album, Hybrid Theory, sold over 12 million copies in the United States alone. As far as why they should be inducted, they tapped into the fear and anger of a generation and turned it into an art form. They also helped to make nu metal, for better or worse, popular. Your opinion of nu metal may vary, but I love it, as I love Linkin Park. The group is still pretty influential with new artists and fans, even after the tragic early death of lead singer Chester Bennington in 2017. There's now rumors floating around that the group is getting back together and that they have a new female lead singer to replace Chester, so that should be interesting. Will they get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame on the first ballot next year? Probably not. Will they get in somewhere down the road? Maybe by, say, the end of the decade? Maybe. Especially since the more obvious choices will probably be in by that point. Do they deserve to get in? In my opinion, yeah. With hits like Numb, Crawling, One Step Closer, In the End, Points of Authority, Breaking the Habit, and other songs that define the millennial generation? Absolutely. Linkin Park deserves to be inducted eventually, maybe not on the first ballot, but eventually into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And just to prove it, we're going to put a selection of their music onto this week's podcast playlist. The link, as I always say, is in the show notes for you. This week's Spotlight Museum is the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. The museum is located on the National Mall, right across the street from the Washington Monument. The museum highlights the experience and contributions of African Americans to specifically America, but to more broadly the world. A lot of the museum deals with slavery and civil rights. There's a slave cabin, for instance, an airplane that was flown by a member of the Tuskegee Airmen, as well as items pertaining to the military, religion, sports, engineering, literature, and politics. The museum also has an extensive collection of artifacts concerning music. The museum boasts, for instance, Chuck Berry's Pink Cadillac, stage costumes worn by Parliament Funkadelic and many others, along with other recordings, sheet music, photos, and such. And there's a great online resource on their website where they put a lot of their collection online to look at, and thankfully so. The museum is open daily from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. admission is free. After all, your tax dollars paid for it. However, the only way that you can walk into the museum without a pass is if you show your military ID. Otherwise, you either have to try to get timed passes in the morning if you want to go, which run out very quickly, by the way, or you can get passes in advance online. Check the museum's website, which is nmaahc.si.edu, for information about the timed passes. And yes, we know that's a really weird website, which is why, of course, we're going to throw that link to the website into the show notes for you. Otis Redding was born on September 9, 1941. He has been called one of the greatest singers of popular music ever. He was a member of Little Richard's backup band, The Upsetters, for a time, and also Johnny Jenkins' band, The Pine Toppers. He started recording as a solo artist in 1962 with Stax Records. His first single was the classic These Arms of Mine in 1962. In 1964, he put out his debut album, Pain in My Heart. What followed was an incredible amount of album and touring production. In fact, as far as touring went, he toured the South and Europe continuously for the better part of the decade, all the while recording song after song. In 1964 and 1965, Otis Redding put out three albums. These Arms of Mine was 64. In March of 65, he put out his second album, The Great Otis Redding Sing Soul Ballads. That album had Otis's first big hit, Mr. Pitiful. While on tour to support this album, Otis started working on songs that would become part of his next album. He decided that most of the songs would be cover versions of soul songs. Three of the original songs were co-written by him: I've Been Loving You Too Long, Respect, and Old Man Trouble. Respect, of course, would be slowed down and covered by Aretha Franklin's classic version. The entire album was recorded in 3 days. It was started on April 19th and then finished on July 9th and 10th. He was backed up by members of the Memphis Horns, the Bar Keys, and Booker T and the MGs. The album was released on September 15th, 1965. Although the album only made it to number 75 on Billboard's albums chart, three of the singles became top 40 hits: I've Been Loving You Too Long, Respect, and Shake. The album, Otis Blue, is considered one of the greatest albums of all time, even though most of it is actually cover songs. After Otis Blue, Otis's career started going better and better. By 1967, Otis was hitting its stride, and after years of being the workhorse for Stax Records, he was finally getting his due. His gravelly vocals, plus his sex appeal and energetic performances, were winning over audiences worldwide. He started off by breaking through at the Monterey Rock Festival only 6 months earlier, the same festival that saw The Who and Jimi Hendrix rise to prominence. Aretha Franklin had made a hit out of his song Respect, and Redding was getting some respect of his own finally with songs like Try a Little Tenderness. Otis was starting to achieve, finally, crossover stardom. On December 10, 1967, Redding left a Memphis recording studio having worked on the song Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, which would end up becoming his biggest hit. He needed to get to a TV performance in Cleveland, Ohio, and then a concert in Madison, Wisconsin, so he took a private plane. And as the plane approached the runway in Madison, Wisconsin, it crashed into a small lake, killing Otis and all but one person on the plane. You can find memorabilia from Otis Redding, along with a lot of other artifacts, at the Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C., and we will put Otis Blue, along with other Otis Redding songs and albums, onto this week's podcast playlist. The link, along with the one for The Police and also Linkin Park, of course, will be in the show notes. The Music Halls of Fame podcast is part of the Music History Today Network, which can be found under Music History Today on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts from, and also on our YouTube page under Music History Today. Thank you very much for listening.